From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. This week, South and North Korean leaders Moon Jae-in and Kim Jong-un met for the third time in a year for a summit in Pyongyang. Mr. Moon's priority was to salvage the relationship between the U.S. and North Korea that had recently soured after much optimism on all sides. On Wednesday, which was day two of the summit, the two leaders signed a broad deal that reiterated their commitments to avoiding war with one another and also made progress toward North Korea's denuclearization, which has been the main sticking point. President Donald Trump hailed the deal, saying on Twitter, Kim Jong-un has agreed to allow nuclear inspections, subject to final negotiations, and to permanently dismantle a test site and launch pad in the presence of international experts. In the meantime, there will be no rocket or nuclear testing. My guest is Christine Ahn. She's the founder and international coordinator of Women Cross DMZ, a global movement of women mobilizing to end war between the two Koreas. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
So we've been talking to you over the months as this whole process has sort of unfolded. And I imagine for you and for people like you who, you know, have a really important stake in what's happening, it's been kind of up and down and an emotional roller coaster, I think.
That's absolutely right.
So this particular summit, this is the third time, as I mentioned, the two Korean leaders have met this year, meeting in Pyongyang. Before they met, it looked like the U.S.-North Korea relationship, which is sort of contingent, which is a very important aspect of this whole issue, was falling to pieces when Mike Pompeo essentially said he wouldn't and visit the area. What happened during this summit, and did everything change?
It was historic, and contrary to the naysayers, it was a significant meeting, and many, many commitments were made by both sides with clear timetables. I mean, from let's start with the social family setting up a reunion center, you know, in Mount Geumgang for aging elders who, as you may have seen on TV, separated families gathering. I mean, there are thousands of families waiting on this list, this government list, to be reunited with their families. So setting that up, military, removing, you know, soldiers from guard posts, demining a section of the DMZ, reopening Kaesong and the Mount Geumgang Tourism Center, linking the lines from North to South Korea. I mean, the list, just the actionable items, just go on and on and on. And as you know, astutely noted, while it's, I think, a significant statement from especially South Korea that irrespective of progress on denuclearization between North Korea and with the United States, the South Koreans and the Korean people must just press on. And, you know, he also addressed on Wednesday evening the in Korea time at the Mass Games, the 150,000 North Koreans. And he said, you know, we are a nation of 5,000 years of history, and we must live as one. And so, you know, to obviously to wild applause. And so I think this is a significant move. I think, you know, there is progress. There is a commitment. Kim Jong-un stated that he and President Moon will work to achieve a nuclear-free Korean Peninsula. And, you know, I think that's important to note that it's not just North Korea, but also the removal of, you know, U.S. installations or even the umbrella in South Korea, over South Korea, and that, you know, they would dismantle Yongbyon and also Dongcheongri, which is the intercontinental ballistic test site. So those, you know, but the clause, of course, was that as long as there was commensurate, you know, action from the U.S. side. So the ball is in Washington's court. Mm-hmm. We saw Donald Trump's tweet that he seemed to think very positively about this outcome. And so now I think, you know, really it's up to the United States how much do they want to achieve the denuclearization of North Korea? They're not going to get it by demanding that that North Korea unilaterally surrender. It's going to be a process. It's a dance. And that's what South Korea and President Moon has been saying. It has to be a step-by-step approach. You can't achieve one without the other. And so hopefully peace could be prominently advanced.
So just to go to what actually happened before this summit, I mentioned the Pompeo snub, and that's how the media was sort of spinning it, that it was this massive snub, that North Korea's Kim Jong-un was also issuing statements accusing the U.S. of, you know, being a strong man and strong-arming North Korea, and then Pompeo canceled his visit. But then at the same time, Trump and Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis canceled U.S. military exercises with South Korea. How symbolically important was this? Because those annual military exercises were essentially a message to North Korea for years that the U.S. was at the border of North Korea and could anytime, through its ally, South Korea, wage war. So that cancellation of military exercises, was that the sort of unsaid show of goodwill from the U.S.?
Well, we know that at the Singapore summit in June, Donald Trump, you know, and we later realized that it was sort of an off the cuff decision or on the spot guidance from Donald Trump, but that he agreed to do that. And obviously the channels of communication and South Korea, as clearly delineated in the Pyongyang declaration from yesterday, wants to move forward towards demilitarizing and reducing military tension significantly with North Korea. So clearly from the South Korean, from the Moon administration, they, you know, support this. They obviously would like better communication with the United States in making such decisions, but it clearly was a positive gesture. And I would say the reason why Pompeo didn't go to North Korea is because I think that they have really had a fundamental difference in worldview. And, you know, if you read the Singapore Declaration, there's four key points. The first is a commitment to improve relations. The second is to establish a peace regime or a peace process. The third is denuclearization, as outlined in the Panmunjom Declaration. And the fourth is the repatriation of remains, which has clearly started. It's a trust-building measure. North Korea, you know, North Korea's position is we are not going to give up the nuclear weapons unless we can have normalized relations, unless we have peace. That is the guarantee that North Korea would like before they actually give up this the deterrent, allegedly sole deterrent. And Washington is saying, we're not going to declare an end to the war. We're not going to actually move, progress towards peace unless you denuclearize. And so I think that was the real sticking point where both sides could not come to agreement, because Pompeo came in the last meeting to Pyongyang, and that's what yielded the kind of reaction from the North Koreans, that he just basically came with talking points of where is progress towards denuclearization, and the North Koreans are saying where is progress towards establishing trust and building a relationship.
So, Christine, in this deal just signed this week, what specifically does it say about denuclearization? Because if you read the press, for example, the New York Times, their headline says North Korea's new promises on weapons stop short of denuclearization. But Trump says that there will be denuclearization. He basically said there's been a lot of progress on it. As far as I can tell, it sounds like North Korea is basically saying conditional denuclearization is our goal, and that condition needs to be peace.
Exactly. You nailed it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically what is going to be, you know, they have to go hand in hand. You're not going to get denuclearization without peace.
Those headlines by outlets like the New York Times seem to not be, you know, they're not giving the whole story, it looks like.
Absolutely. And, you know, I would just also add that, you know, what also took place in the last week is Bob Woodward's book. So we know that Bob Woodward's book, Fear, disclosed that the Obama administration had seriously weighed a first strike on North Korea. And so that's the Clinton administration. We know that they considered doing that in 1994. We know the Bush administration did it. So the Obama administration, so three successive administrations of the U.S. Had seriously considered regime change with a first strike on North Korea. And meanwhile, in South Korea, in the last 13 years, we had over a decade of hardline rule of Lee Myung-bak and Park Geun-hye that wanted regime change of North Korea. So when you put all of that together, I mean, it makes sense that North Korea would have serious reservations about giving up its sole nuclear or sole deterrent from a first strike unless there were actual actionable steps towards peace and establishing trust and building a relationship. And so that's why I think that it's significant that the two Koreas are setting this path forward. They are setting the table for peace. They are dictating that no matter what, that the Korean Peninsula will no longer be a country at war. And so it is a significant declaration. What is the outcome of Moon Jae-in's trip to Pyongyang is major. And, you know, they said, Kim Jong-un said, you know, that he would be coming to Seoul, hopefully by the end of this year. So I think the focus now is upon the U.S. and is the U.S. willing to make that step to declare the end of the war and establish a peace process towards hopefully the signing of a peace treaty that formally ends the Korean War.
Is denuclearization as important for South Korea as it is for the U.S.?
I think it is, because I think that as both Moon and Kim has outlined, they don't want nuclear weapons, but they also realize that they have to get to peace first. And so I think the Moon administration has really been very clear that the two need to go side by side. And I think, you know, progress towards reducing military tensions, whether it's on the West Sea or in the DMZ, is significant. And so I do believe that for the Moon administration, it is very important. But most importantly, because progress, for example, between North and South Korea weighs so heavily on progress, you know, between Washington and North Korea. For example, just 2 weeks ago, North and South Korea wanted to test the rail lines from Seoul to Pyongyang. And who blocked it? But the UN command, which is really the US forces in Korea.
Really?
And yes, and so now we're seeing, you know, lots of questions being raised by neocons. Is the, you know, commitments made by Moon Jae-in to reopening Kaesong, to opening the Mount Geumgang Tourism Center, is that in violation of UN Security Council sanctions? I mean, you know, we have basically propaganda war where basically from Washington, from the Beltway, this Washington consensus is North Korea is not going to give up its nuclear weapons. So let's just keep trying the same failed policy, which now they're calling it maximum pressure, but really it's strategic patience. It's we're not going to engage. We're not going to have dialogue with North Korea until it gives up its nuclear weapons. And what I think the Moon and Kim inter-Korean progress has demonstrated is that actually meeting face-to-face, having dialogue, building trust actually yields far more than just punishing sanctions or threats of military conflict. And so I think that's the takeaway is will Trump see what can be achieved and what I think he did by actually meeting with Kim Jong-un. I mean, many people say, oh, what did that even accomplish? And, you know, let's say Trump has been in office for 2 years. In the first year was all fire and fury and threats. And what did we see from North Korea? Over 20 missile tests, a nuclear weapons test, provocation and belligerence. And, you know, in the aftermath of the Olympics, and then where we saw a truce, what did we see since Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump met? We saw a de-escalation. We saw the halting, as you noted, of the U.S.-South Korea war drills. We have seen North Korea no longer test a nuclear weapon or a missile. We have seen North Korea release American prisoners. We have seen North Korea return the remains of U.S. servicemen who fell during the Korean War. We have seen progress. And so I think that is a huge victory for diplomacy, for peace, and hopefully a major step towards ending this 65-year-old Korean War.
So the deal between the North and South Korea on Wednesday, did it include any conditions for the United States? I understand that one of the things that both Koreas, of course, really want is a formal declaration to the end of the Korean War from the 1950s, because it was just ended by a truce. Is that it as far as you know? Is there more that North Korea is demanding from the U.S.?
I think that they are demanding, as a first step, just declaring that the war has ended. And, you know, that's more obviously a symbolic gesture. But I think that will go a long way towards then changing the orientation from, because right now it is a ceasefire. They have been, obviously, whether it's the joint war drills, the 30,000 U.S. troops on the Korean Peninsula, it has been an orientation in preparation for war. So once the heads of states say the Korean War has ended and we are going to begin a process of building mutual trust and to have regular dialogue, that, I think, is going to be the actionable step-by-step process that would lead North Korea to dismantle Yongbyon, that will lead North Korea to invite foreign inspectors to be there during that dismantling, and also the long-range missile test site. I mean, you know, it's just, that's what we saw from the Moon and Kim summit in Pyongyang, is that progress really depends on actionable steps from the United States.
Right. So what's next after this summit? I mean, there have been a long succession of meetings and summits which have borne progress step by step. As far as you know, what happens next? You know, you mentioned that families have been reuniting, or at least getting the chance to meet after decades apart. So is there anything planned on the ground on the border between the two nations, as well as on the international level for taking the next steps to cement this deal? You said there, it's filled with actionable items, and so presumably it's going to start being implemented?
I mean, right away. And, you know, just last week, the North and South Koreans opened a diplomatic office in Kaesong so that they would have 24/7, 365 days out of the year communication. So that has been that has never taken place. And so Moon Jae-in going to Pyongyang and addressing 150,000 North Koreans at the mass games, it's, as somebody who has been following this and hoping for this, it is, you know, it's a miracle that we are here than where we were at, for example, in 2015 when we organized the Women's Peace Walk across the DMZ. So the fact that they are taking steps to, for example, demining the DMZ in a joint area, in a village that lies along the border between North and South Korea, I think it is so huge. And it just, I can't even, you know, describe to you what this means for the potential of a unified Korea that is no longer at war and that can peacefully coexist. And so that's why I think for those of us back here in the United States, we have to play a role, because progress between North and South Korea, unfortunately, as I noted with the lines, the railroad, is so dependent on progress between the US and North Korea. And so that's why we really must push. We must push for our members of Congress to potentially introduce a resolution declaring an end to the Korean War. And I think on the international level, we will see potentially some progress made between Trump and Moon. We'll be meeting at the opening day of the General Assembly in New York, and hopefully we will see potentially a trilateral meeting between Kim Jong-un, Moon Jae-in, and Donald Trump declaring an end to the Korean War.
Well, that would be historic indeed. Finally, you mentioned the term neocons earlier, the sort of new, which is the term that we don't hear as much anymore, but it was basically a group of politicians in the United States who have a worldview that relies on preserving U.S. supremacy worldwide. And unfortunately we have politicians that make decisions based on partisanship rather than on actual right and wrong. So because Donald Trump is overseeing something that is inadvertently actually working and doing something constructive, much as we all detest, or many of us, especially those among progressives, detest everything that Trump does, is there a fear that after the midterm elections, if the House and possibly even the Senate change party hands, that the liberals, the Democrats, could undo this progress?
I know. Trust me, that is it. I mean, it's...
Which is just really kind of sad that we're even considering that, but it's
it
a possibility.
It really is. I know. Unfortunately, Bernie Sanders and Senator Merkley, you know, the so-called resistance, you know, sent a letter to Donald Trump last week where they really applauded Moon Jae-in for declaring an end to the war with North Korea, but didn't even call on Donald Trump to do the same. And in fact, you know, maintained this like broken policy of maximum pressure until North Korea, you know, did X, Y, and Z with regards to denuclearization. And I think that position really must shift. And so that's why it's going to take all of us, all of the listeners, to really push Congress and really change the terms of the debate. And the good thing is, you know, there are some important Democrats, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, who have said what Donald Trump is doing with regards to meeting with Kim Jong-un and meeting and moving dialogue forward versus maintaining in this stuck strategic patience framework is good and it's positive. And so we have to just keep lifting up those voices within the Democratic Party, within the liberal establishment that supports, that has the experience of negotiating and engaging with North Korea and recognizes that their approach did not work. And so we are now in a new day, and especially with progress between North and South Korea, it would just be absurd for the United States to continue to throw sand in the gears of the peace train.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Christine. We'll keep our eye on this story as it continues to unfold. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
My guest is Christine Ahn, founder and international coordinator of Women Cross DMZ, a global movement of women mobilizing to end war between the Koreas. We've been discussing the third summit between the two Korean leaders that took place this week. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.